Hey, got the morning show here on Raglan Community Radio. My name's Aaron. I'm your host this morning. And our second interview of the morning, we've got Rob's in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, what are we doing here? In my head, I was thinking, I haven't done a weather report. Let's do a weather report. It's raining outside.
That's the weather report.
And the surf's not very good. The elements are against us this morning, Rob's.
It depends on your perspective, though.
Yeah, I know. Right? I'm saying that provocatively.
Yeah, that was the answer. Yeah. As anticipated. Yeah, it's lovely to sit outside, and I know it's not as comfortable as warm sunshine sometimes, but it's there to be experienced, and you can totally embrace it and get into it. I remember when I was young, and it rained. I was from Yorkshire, where it rains a lot.
A lot.
And this time of year, it's you know, coming up winter solstice, so it'd be very, very dark. Come home from school and it's dark. So a lot of dark raininess, and I used to love just walking around putting some dunes on.
Did you?
Some happy memories from my childhood in the rain, doing it.
Actually, I mean, our kids, when they were little, liked to play in the rain as well. But I've been to Lancashire, which is right next to Yorkshire, so basically the same weather conditions in November several times.
Yeah.
And it's not hospitable weather in the slightest.
It's grim, isn't it? That's what they say. It's grim up north.
It's grim up north. And but you as a child, although I'm not going to say even like you were unique as a child, because I think a lot of kids probably want to do that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously I'm working with kids a lot, and as a mentor or facilitator, I remember in the earlier days feeling quite anxious when it was a day like this, because a lot of the things that we might have enjoyed doing in the sunshine weren't necessarily, you know, appropriate to do on days like this. But I find with the kids it makes no difference, you know. It's just life's amazing and let's do stuff and have fun sort of attitude.
But we do train them to be worried about the weather after a while.
Yeah, even our language, you know, it's like many people, miserable is probably a commonly used term for a day like this.
Yeah, and I do associate miserable, that word, with dampness.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. In so many different ways, you can look, obviously we need the rain, like especially now coming into summer, we need the rain, the world needs the rain, we are rain.
Yeah.
It's a day to go into rainy day mode, and I find that with the kids as well. It's a different vibe. It's more jokes, more stories. It's more community aspect when it's a rainy day vibe, whereas the sunshine really brings out the high energy and the shoutiness and the vibrancy and a lot more physicality. Embracing this rainy dayness, it's actually quite nice to allow myself and feel I'm allowed to slow down a little bit. According to the weather,
yeah. So, I was trying to segue into what I thought we might be talking about. Did I succeed in that?
Well, it's always a very loose plan, isn't it, with our interviews. I was thinking a few thoughts this week, as you do, in the old ticker, and I was thinking like what I don't know. And the things I've heard from people that do, like, regarding birds and, you know, nature observation and things. And, the way you get to know this stuff is by being there. But, you know, it's not necessarily, well, it isn't. It isn't from reading books and watching videos. It's actually being in nature. And then I was thinking about the word elder, which we've talked about before, and how, you know, an elder would have been in nature a lot and seen a lot and experienced a lot of nature and therefore would have been the best person to, you know, to come to for advice or for explanations or for direction
around
natural living.
Kind of in our more distant past. And
Yeah.
Before we became mostly urbanized.
A past or a different aspect of culture. I think, our modern culture is it's a different world we're living in with a different set of values. Nature connections, it's all about relationship. And if you imagine that was a human you're trying to get be in relationship with, Obviously, the more time you spend with that human, the more you're going to get to know them, the closer you'll feel. And then if you're seeing them, you're not just seeing them when it's bright and sunny and happy moments. Not that I'm saying rain's a sad moment, but going through the stormy times with them and all the different colours and all the different angles and perspectives of that relationship. That's how you get really deep in relationship with whatever, whether human or with the natural world around us.
So we're treating nature at the moment and our culture like someone we saw walking on the other side of the road.
Yeah.
And then we know it about that well.
Perhaps, yeah. You know,
it's not culture.
As inviting, is it? It's not the sort of warm fuzzies to actually sit, you know, not that you want to sit in the rain, but to sit and watch the world on the daylight. It doesn't give you that same feeling, and a lot of people probably do that for the feeling, you know, because it feels good to sit outside in the sunshine and feel the warm air. But doing that on a rainy day is definitely, you know, less appetizing. But I want to encourage everyone to do that, day, night, rain or shine, to just get outside, be outside with awareness to see the world around you, because every once in a while you'll see something magical. You'll see things which you'll tell the story of for the rest of your life, and you'll develop a deeper relationship with nature, and that will never stop serving you. Never, ever stop serving you.
How does it serve?
Knowledge of place, that sense of belonging, friendship, you know. The difference between being with someone you don't know and being someone that you know quite well. So many levels.
So you feel a sense of kinship, friendship with the natural environment generally, or the bits in it, or...?
It's nature's a community. And it's made up of so many different things. There's so many things, parts of nature I'm never ever going to get to know. There's too much of it, you know. There's so many levels and depths, and I can spend my whole life out there. But the world's so diverse and so deep that, you know, we're never going to be a master, and we're never going to know everything. But yeah, birds, every single bird. You know, not just species, but the individual birds, that particular sparrow, that particular blackbird, getting to know at that level, every plant, you know, every cloud formation, every wind, just anything that you can experience has a story behind it. And you're not going to know the story just by feeling it, but in time you're going to build up different chapters, and that's going to start forming stories for you.
So, I probably know every shop down Bow Street. I could probably go away from Bow Street and tell you the shops and the order that they go down and recognize them instantly. I can't do that in a forest. It all looks the same.
Uh-huh.
But is that because I haven't spent the time in the forest and got to know it and got to understand it?
So, there's a bit of a switch in mindset here as well, which you're sort of bringing up. So a lot of people in the sort of nature realm, what's the word for that? There's a word for
the industry. We're not talking about the industry.
Not the industry. Like, no, just the kind of modern term which kind of describes, it's kind of the study of nature or the knowledge of nature. Natural history.
Ecology.
Ecology. We'll do fine.
All right, that'll do for now.
People need names, and if there isn't a name, and to find a name, they either need to be told the name or they need a book which has a picture and the name next to it. And once they can match a picture, or they can, you know, whatever, a tree, they can match the tree with a name, they feel, oh cool, I know that tree.
Mm.
And then that's generally it, you know. Then they might go and find another tree. And that isn't, just knowing someone's name, it doesn't mean you know them. It's not a particular, you know, it's not a deep relationship at all, and it's very limiting. And trees don't really give themselves names. And it's not necessary from their perspective. You know, if you meet someone, it's in our, you know, human world, it's polite to, you know, to ask and know someone's name, and you can call them by the name, and it feels good when someone does that to you. trees, I don't feel care too much about that. But the tree is there. The tree is treeing, and you don't need to know its name. You don't need to know anything about it. It's there, similar to sky and whatever. You know, it's there all the time. You just have to be curious and go and meet it. What do the leaves, what do the shape? Ask questions, you know. Why is it growing that way? Why is it growing here? Who's it growing next to? And obviously it's a different form of communication than we use in our human world. But by doing that, you get to know. You start getting to know that tree, and then you'll see it again, or you'll see another member of that species, and it will trigger something in your brain, which, I know that guy, I know that thing. And when that happens all the time, because you build relationship with so many species, animals and plants, never in your life are you ever going to feel alone. You're just going to be constantly navigating this world with the feeling you're surrounded by friends, in familiar company the whole time. And navigating life with that in an epidemic of loneliness, which is really what, one of the many epidemics really in terms of sort of mental health that we're experiencing culturally right now. That is gold, to live your life with that, knowing you belong there, knowing that you're always amongst friends, is a very special thing.
See, I imagine a lot of people, you'd take them into the forest and they'd be like, oh, there's nothing here. But you're obviously saying that's not what you think, clearly. You know the trees well.
Yeah.
You talk about them like they're friends, like there's, as you use the word community. I feel like there's such a big gap between where our culture is and where you are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is why you work with kids so much.
Yeah.
Because it's too late for the adults.
No. Never too late. But yeah, I mean, let's pull it out of the forest, because realistically, many adults have got busy, fast-paced lives, and actually, like, the thought of how am I going to find time to even go to the bush, especially for people my age who've, thick in parenting. Mm. But it doesn't need to be the forest. It's anywhere, and that's why just being outside, and the best place to spend a lot of time outside is on your deck or in your garden, the places which is absolutely easy to put the kettle on, make a cup of coffee or tea,
right,
and just go off 10 minutes and just sit outside and be with the birds, be with the plants around you, because they're the first ones you should get to know.
Your neighbours.
Your closest neighbours, the ones that you see in every single day, ones that you walk past for years and years and years. Maybe it's time to say hi to them, and that's where it begins, and then you sort of stretch further out from there, and wherever you are in the world, nature's around you. Less so inside, when we're talking about sort of environmental nature, and
hold on, what's environmental nature?
Well, nature's nature, Like,
we talk about those. We use those words interchangeably.
Yeah, we're in.
It's like saying wet water.
We're in the Raglan Community Radio studio right now.
Yeah.
And is there nature in here? Yes, there is nature in here.
Well, there's you and me.
There's everything that's been created here has a thread of nature to it. Whether it's sort of the journey there's so many levels to nature, but environmental nature, I'm talking more. Classical nature.
Trees and living things. Yeah.
And I remembered also this week, we used to do these big bike trips every summer when my son was young. Mm. Spend many months on the bike, usually down the South Island, and pack a hammock and a tarp, and off we'd go. And a couple of friends Raglan friends, they were living in Greymouth. Sort of doing a contract down there for 6 months, so we cycled to Greymouth, and they had this massive house that they were sort of given. It's huge, there's only two of them, so heaps of space for us to stay. Because this house was so big, and like me and Matt, we'd literally spent 2 months, we only went indoors to go to a shop to buy some groceries, every moment we're outside, and suddenly we're inside, and so it became quite apparent how sticky this house was, how hard it was to leave it. Didn't feel great being in there, but there was comfy couches
sticky.
The house was there. Yeah, like it was, it had hold of you.
Yeah.
And to actually like release yourself from its grasp and step outside was a push.
Yeah.
And because I've had that experience, I notice it a lot more in life, and I probably only had that experience because I hadn't really been inside for such a long time, and it became apparent. But it does take a bit of effort to leave the couch and leave that sort of comforting embrace of your home.
And that's what we've got. That's what we've all got when we think about, especially on a day like today, going into the forest.
Mm.
Like, yeah, I don't really want to do that today.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you've had the opportunity to get outside of that.
Yeah.
And can see it. Yeah.
For sure, yeah. I mean, many times I just didn't have the choice, you know, because I'm deep in, you know, far away from anywhere, and the rains come. So you just got to sit through it and learn how to be a rainy day. And it's great. I love a rainy day, me.
There's a song. I'm thinking of a song.
Sing it.
No, because I can't remember the lyrics. First of all, I can't remember the lyrics properly, so it's going to be a waste of time. But also, people will turn off if I do that. Okay, so it's... the whole conversation, I'm just feeling this big gap between what you're talking about and where I'm living, and I'm in my head representing our culture.
Yep.
So it's and how do you get? I mean, you're only getting people coming to you who are curious, I guess.
Yeah.
And I guess that's all you can work with, really.
Yep.
I mean, I've just talked to a man who was on a mission. Are you a man on a mission too?
No, I wouldn't say I'm a man on a mission. You know, maybe secretly, quietly. I'd love to. I just know how powerful it's been for me, and I can see how powerful it has been and is for other people and to more people. I could nudge in that direction. Great. I think it's good for our community and obviously for the individuals. But you know, I'm not saying to anyone right now, you know, get outside in the rain now, go for a bushwalk. I'm not saying do anything. I'm just planting that seed and just saying, what if when you're looking out your kitchen window with your cup of tea in your hand, what if you just one time step outside with that cup of tea and just have your 5 minutes there and see what's that like and see what you see and see what your experience there, you know? Can be easy. It can be a time when the time is right. When you push people to do things, I can often have the sort of negative impact, the opposite impact. But yeah, what if next time you carry your groceries from your car to your door, you just have a look and see what plants are there by your feet, and you don't need to know their name. You know.
Yeah.
What if you just see what the color of their leaves are and what shape their stem is, and Just be aware, when do they flower, you know? Who are they growing next to? What plants, what bugs like to, you know, drink their sap or walk on their leaves or eat their leaves? There's so much life around you all the time. And I guess that's my point, is just that's there. And it's actually a really wonderful thing. And all you have to do, even if you're just walking past, you don't need to change your stride, you don't need to change direction, you don't need to go anywhere. But just when you are outside, just give it a little bit more attention and just say hi to that world around you. And that's where it can begin.
It's interesting, I've just reflected on the change in how we do our houses in this country. If you look at houses built in the 50s, they were kind of closed off from the natural world, and then after that, the 60s, especially in the 70s, it started up. The hard line between house and outside has been broken down, and people have decks and big opening doors and a pergola, and so the sense of there's no longer a hard line between inside and outside, and I think that's an attempt to, there must be an attempt to reconnect with those things that feel good about the outside world.
For sure. And even more recently, the sort of tiny house / kind of modular living set. You know, that's my situation. So I can't go to the toilet or to the kitchen without getting wet today, without being outside. And I love that. I wouldn't ever want to change that. That's a great thing.
So you've been doing your after-school classes or also your school-time classes as well for quite a few years now.
Mm-hmm.
How are the kids coming out of that different to the kids who don't do that sort of thing? Like, it's a big question, and
it's a big question. And it's an, and it's answer,
an, you're gonna, you can only give me an opinion, not really a study.
I don't think the answer is what people would expect. The answer, I don't think generally cut a tile, especially the bush school part of it, is necessarily what people expect it to be. You know, yes, we light fires. Yes, we learn, you know, that kind of skill set, but also we don't learn that. You know, there'll be kids that can come to cut a tile for years and still not really know how to tie a knot and still struggle with fire. So, you know, that's there for them. But the people that still, you know, aren't doing that now are people that, whilst being a kid, have never been curious about it. And so, you know, as an adult, it's just not their thing. So what's the point in coming to cut a tire if you're not interested in fire and outdoors things?
Yeah.
Because I guess above all, especially with our kids, it is your own nature, you know? It's a place where they can grow and be the people, you know, be so true to themselves, be celebrated for who they are, be on their journey, have someone alongside them, have a mentor who's there for them, who's telling them they're great, who's really wants to hear their stories, really wants to hear the big things that are going on in their life. You know, that's really the thread which underlies everything with the kids that we're working with. And a lot of these kids, you know, been with since we started up Cut a Tile sort of 7 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a different form before that for a few years. They're still with us, and do they all have the skills to go gallivanting off into the wilderness and survive for a month? Not really, no, not in that sense. Have they got great problem solving? Do they know themselves? Do they know their limitations? Are they attuned with their true path of their life and who they are? Yep, totally. And I'd, you know, despite obviously a huge passion for bushcraft and these skills, actually seeing people connect with themselves to me really is more important.
And that's what you mean by
learning a skill set.
It's probably what there's the deeper meaning of nature connection is connecting with their own nature.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always see nature as threefold. So I guess firstly, your nature, you know, who you are and how, where you belong in this world, and then community nature. So the interaction of the community around you in a more sort of human community. And then the more classical living things, plants, ecology, rocks, weather, side of nature. And they're all hugely important. But they're all so deep that, you know, you never get to the bottom of the barrel with any of them. There's always more to explore, and nature, whether it's nature inside you or nature around you, it's always going to have many, many more lessons for you.
What's something you learned recently? Because you're the mentor and the nature guy, and right, and we think you know all the stuff.
Uh-huh.
But what's something you've learned recently in the last few years that you didn't know you were going to learn?
Oh, last few years recently.
Well, you know, something that you couldn't learn at the start.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of my learning, because I'm working a lot with you know, I spent a long period of time developing skills. You know, so we can do sort of 5 or 6 traditional fire techniques, and obviously shelter, and you know, hundreds of knots, and that suffices. You know, I'm happy with that knowledge. There's nothing that I feel I wish I knew how to do this, which is actually going to be useful, and important to me. So a lot of my learning now is just navigating human situations, and you know, especially with kids. So just different challenges, different human challenges, different ways of interacting, different ways of supporting people, different ways of listening and hearing people, you know, not just at the level of words, but sort of, you know, deeply listening and deeply hearing and seeing people at different levels. And it's pretty hard to actually put into words specifics of that, you know, to actually highlight, I learnt this thing, you know?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, once you're sort of working at that level, it's, yeah, words lose a bit of
There's a bit more power. Flow. There's flow happening.
Yeah.
And there's more things happening in the moment than you can pin down when you're surrounded by
and
a bunch of kids.
It becomes very sort of, you know, spontaneous and very intuitive. And, you know, ultimately, sort of, it's changing how I'm wired and who I am as a person, which is, you know, a huge sort of part of being a mentor. It's a big surrender. And I remember back in the day, I think I had this conversation this week. It's a real common thing for anyone working with people, especially early on in that experience, to feel quite a lot of anxiety. You know, it's a common thing for teachers. I've got a big class tomorrow, to feel anxious about that and the challenges it's going to bring. And for a lot of teachers and a lot of people, a safety net for that is planning. You know, and that was for me for a time. You know, in my head, right, I'm going to do this, and we're going to do that, and that, and that. Cool, I've got my day sorted. As long as we can kind of follow this plan, that's my safety net.
Yeah,
and it will all be fine, and then I could go to sleep knowing that.
yeah.
But then, you know, you sort of delve deeper into that, and it's like, well, I'm allowing my fear and my incapacity to sort of to feel and to navigate this uncomfortable feeling to affect everyone's day, and especially the nature of the day. Because if I'm putting this structure that I need everyone to abide by, you know, everyone needs to do this and this and this, so many missed opportunities there. So actually becoming a mentor is really a lot of personal, you know, spiritual work, really, to sort of to work on those uncomfortable feelings and to find your peace and to let them be okay. And so you can come in the morning with positivity and an empty space, and you can deeply listen to what the kids are saying and what the kids are needing. And you can completely spend your whole day responding to that and tying that together. And, you know, that takes a lot of work and a lot of time. But I think ultimately, in the modern sense of a mentor, you know, obviously mentors were mentored traditionally.
Yeah.
So it was just, you know, it was a natural sort of progression, but in a sort of a world with less of that support, you know, we kind of have to, in a way, find our own path through being a mentor. And it's a hard. Some hard graft to be done there at the deeper levels to let go and allow nature to be nature.
Yeah. All right, folks, I've been talking to Robs from Kura Taiao. And anything happening at the moment that you're up to before we go?
Program? Yeah, we do. Yeah, I've got all the dates and everything's on the website, kuratayao.com.
K-U-R-A-T-A-I-A-O.
.com.
Yeah, thank you for that.
There should be a fire law workshop this Sunday. I'm kind of expecting a fire ban at some point to happen, you know.
Not today, but maybe
in the month or so. So this will be the last chance to delve deep into fire and to practice some of those age-old fire techniques and to go really deep with fire. And there's, you know, you spend your life lighting fires and you're never going to know fire. You know, like I said before, nature's always got things to learn, but opportunities to get a really good foundation to sort of, yeah, to take some big steps in that journey, and fire can really teach you a lot. And then your holiday program, sort of mid-January.
Okay, all right. So it's a few weeks away yet, thankfully.
Yeah.
It's only the 9th of December. All right, Rob, thanks for coming in.
Cheers.